What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. It is episode 409. I'm your host, Garrett Hayden. Great to be back with you folks this week. We got a good pod for you guys today. Might be a little bit shorter than usual. Don't have a lot of stuff to get to. Obviously, it's that time of year where, Red Sox really the only team that is active. Revolution are as well. We'll talk about them as well. We got some Patriots stuff to get to, but maybe a little shorter today. But doesn't mean that we have a shortage of information to get to. There's also NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals that also start this week. So I'll definitely be getting into a preview of both of those series. Also, as you may have noticed on Facebook and Twitter, I posted that we are doing a mailbag this week, so you can submit any questions that you'd like. Don't have to be Boston sports related. They can be any kind of sports questions. I'll gladly answer just about anything. So we've already gotten a good amount of questions so far from some listeners, so that's great. But yeah, you can send in your questions before Friday at 10 a.m. That's when I'll be recording the mailbag episodes. You have until then to send in your questions. You can reach out to me in any sort of way. If you follow the Twitter page or the Facebook page, you can reach out on either of those social media. So hopefully get some more good questions this week. No theme, just any kind of Boston sports questions that you have, or any sports questions that you have as well. Got a good top five for you guys later in today's episode, so really looking forward to that. But I think we're going to get started with the Red Sox today. And obviously, when we last spoke, there was a lot of negativity to kind of address with the Red Sox and their, continued struggles. But I think there were some positives that you saw this weekend. The Red Sox coming off a pretty frustrating three-game sweep at the hand of at the hands of the Milwaukee Brewers earlier in the week, with a couple blown leads in both of those games that they lost, or there are two of the three games that they lost in Milwaukee that they blew late leads, and they very easily could have, won two out of three in that series. But I think there were some good pitching performances this weekend, so I felt like the Red Sox did bounce back. Giolito pitched Friday night and pitched really, really well, and then you got obviously an excellent outing from Garrett Crochet yesterday. So I think that was obviously really, really important. Giolito, oddly enough, I thought pitched well, got pulled out of the game kind of early in the fifth inning in the first game of the series, and actually didn't pitch enough to actually get the win, which, I completely forgot about that. You need to pitch at least five innings to be, to be qualified to get a win. And he pitched 4 2/3, so didn't quite pitch enough. But I did think, like, decent outing, 4 2/3, 5 hits, an earned run, couple walks, 3 strikeouts, and brought his ERA way down to 4.78. So, I think that was a good sign that you could see a solid outing from him, because, outside of Crochet, the Red Sox have really not found any consistency with the rotation. Buehler's had his struggles. He's not been healthy the entire season. Bayo has had his issues, really after those first two quality starts that he had to start the season. He's kind of just been average. And, you need good quality starting pitching. This team desperately needs it. If they're going to be any kind of contention this season, they need, quality starting pitching. Tanner Houck obviously has had his problems. He's on the injured list right now. I don't really know if it's an injury thing, really, to be perfectly honest. But, I think, Fitz is back in the rotation. He pitches tonight. Looking forward to seeing how he pitches, because he's had some decent outings, I think, in the last, year plus that he's been a starter. And then obviously Crochet and, Cutter Crawford is also, working his way back with the knee injury. So it seems like he will be starting a rehab assignment soon. So maybe there's a reinforcement coming. Maybe Hauk just needs that IL stint to, get himself right. That's, I think, at least hope. And he can regain some of that form that he had prior to the All-Star break last season. So, I think with the questions that this team has had offensively, with losing Bregman and, kind of the musical chairs that seem to be going on with this lineup daily, it's hard to expect them to be like a high-octane offensive team. And so if that's the case, you need to be able to rely on your starting pitching to go deep into games and be consistent. And they've really not been able to get that, unfortunately, outside of Crochet. And even Crochet is not going super deep into games. He pitched into the seventh yesterday, 112 pitches, which is by far the most he's thrown this season. And it's like, they need the consistent starting pitching, and then it hopes that you get to that, bullpen that has had tremendous issues this season. But it's like, that's kind of the hope, that you get quality starting pitching and then get it to, Chapman in whichever way that you can. Obviously, it's not really worked that way, because I think the bullpen, for the most part, has been a major problem outside of Chapman, which is kind of just odd to think about, where it's like, it's not the actual closer that's having the issues, it's the kind of seventh, eighth guys that are having their issues. Slayton, who just went on the injured list. Hendricks, who's also on the injured list. It's like guys like that that have had major struggles this season, because, Chapman, for the most part, prior to that blown save in Milwaukee, he was perfect in his save situations, and he's been really good. So it's like he's not really been the problem. And that's what's, kind of crazy, as we talked about last week, that here are these guys that you've brought in, free agent wise, trade wise, talking about Chapman, Crochet, and Bregman, and they've all been really good. They've not been the issue, and that's kind of crazy when you think about it, that, it was a good offseason that the Red Sox had, and you had all three of those guys that have performed well. Bregman's obviously hurt and will be out for a decent amount of time. But it just is kind of crazy to think that those three guys have pretty much been as advertised, and yet this team is 3 games under 500 and doesn't really seem like there's a lot of hope. Although I think that it was a good weekend series for the Red Sox. Pitching obviously was great. Getting a couple wins was great. I think that, Trevor Story, as much as I was critical of him on last week's pod, he had a really good weekend. Had a home run on Friday night, and then obviously had the bases clearing double in the first inning in yesterday's game for the only runs that the Red Sox scored in a 3-1 win. But I think it was good to see him be able to kind of get a couple of big hits, because he's, historically struggled at the plate as of late. And so I think having him, have the confidence that, okay, get a couple of big hits in a couple of big situations in a big road series that I think the Red Sox really needed to get 2 out of 3, at least in this weekend series. Obviously, had the loss on Saturday, and the bad defense kind of continues to plague them, and kind of just bad pitching. Starting pitching too, as Buehler gave up 10 hits and 5 2/3. But I think, it's the little things that kind of just got out of hand in Saturday's game, as Buehler gave up a couple home runs and the Red Sox were unable to really do anything offensively, as they only got 5 hits in the entire game. So, that was kind of a tough loss. But I think good to see them rebound yesterday afternoon on the road, and now, come back home to play an Angels team that is, struggling, I think, as much as the Red Sox have been. And I think the Sox get a great opportunity to, you know, try to build off that momentum. And I know we talk all the time that this team has never really been able to build off the positive momentum from, you know, weekend series where they do well, or any kind of series that they do well, and then come back home or go to the next series and drop three in a row. But, you know, I think this is a decent opportunity against an Angels team that isn't very good that you can take advantage of, you know, offensively, and see if those big hits by Story kind of like ignite the offense a little bit. And, you know, maybe you can take two out of three from the Angels or sweep them, get back to 500, you know, and start to feel better about what you're doing. But I think, I feel like there's a limit to how good this team really can be with the injuries that they're dealing with right now. But I think it's been great to see Marcelo Meyer be up here with the major league team. And I do think that it's really only a matter of time before Roman Anthony gets up here. And I think that there's a distinct possibility that, you know, they could be okay offensively if, you know, Anthony does get called up and the Red Sox, you know, figure it out and kind of have some balls to you know, sit down someone like Zaidan Rafaela or send him to Worcester or something like that. Because as great as he is defensively, it just is like not working for him offensively. And, you know, I do think that Christian Campbell could definitely use some time in Worcester as well, just with how much he's struggling offensively. You know, I know that they're young guys and you want to be able to see the development. The best way to have them develop is to play with the big league club. But I just feel like with the injury to Bregman, with kind of the musical chairs that they've been playing with the lineup, it kind of is like someone like Anthony, I think, could kickstart your offense. And I think playing him in the outfield instead of Rafaela, I think, would make a lot of sense, you know. And I just feel like this is a team that's already kind of starving for offense, and it just, they're not doing themselves any favors by keeping Rafaela in the lineup. And I know that he's an excellent defender and he makes all kinds of outstanding plays. And I do think that, yes, they would probably get worse defensively, but you need some kind of spark offensively. You really need it. And I think, like, the Red Sox are really just counting on Trevor Story and his big hits this weekend. You know, I don't know if that's enough. You know, I think you're already pretty shorthanded, you know, without Casas. I know that he was struggling this season, but a guy that, like, has the ability to hit 20, 25 home runs, and then you're without Bregman as well. And it just seems like they're not really willing to utilize, like, all their resources, which is kind of strange to me. And it kind of is like, this is kind of something that I've, you know, thought about in the last week or so since the last podcast, that it almost just seems like Cora and the coaching staff are just like too comfortable with kind of what's been going on. That it's like, oh, you know, it's still kind of early in the season. You know, it's like, I just don't feel like there's a sense of urgency in terms of ways to, like, improve the team. That it almost doesn't seem like, you know, yeah, it's exactly that, that it doesn't seem like there's an urgency to be like, okay, like, we are 61 games in, we're three games under 500. Why are we not doing everything we can to, like, have this team as good, like, where they should be offensively? And it's almost like they're okay with Rafaela just being in the lineup and not giving you anything at the plate. And it's just like, it feels like we're too comfortable here. And it kind of is unfortunate because, I don't know, you'd like to have more urgency. And I don't know, maybe I'm not articulating this well enough, but I just feel like there's an element of, like, being too comfortable and willing to just be like, oh, you know, we'll let the young guys figure it out. But it's just like, hey, like you're playing with expectations this year. And I just feel like we've now fallen back to being like, oh, well, we're still a developing team. And it's like, okay, I guess. But it's like you have your front office talking about winning 95 games, going back to the playoffs, winning the division. And it's like, I feel like there's kind of a disconnect where it's like, why is there not more urgency to get this team in better position, to do everything they can to, withstand some injuries? It's good to call up Marcelo Meyer, but it almost seems like they only just did it out of necessity, and they wouldn't have done it otherwise. And it's kind of just like, I don't know why they haven't called up Anthony, and I feel like they should because it's going to help improve the team offensively, and we're just, I don't know, not being as urgent as we should be about it. So I don't know. That's just kind of my overall thoughts at the moment. Obviously, they'll start the 3-game series with the Angels at Fenway tonight. Richard Fitz will go in game one, and then I think you'll have Brian Bello go in game two. And then Giolito will start the third game on Wednesday afternoon, and then the Red Sox will be in New York to take on the Yankees this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So that will be interesting to see how the Red Sox do against the Yankees in New York. I think it's their first series. Yes, it's their first series against the Yankees this season. So we'll see how they do in the Bronx. So I think that's going to do it. The Red Sox will play the Yankees the following weekend at Fenway. So they'll play them in quick succession. But I think it's going to do it for the Red Sox. We're going to move on to talk a little Patriots. Obviously, they've had their voluntary off-season workouts. I think they'll have a couple more workouts this week as well. I think that, again, there's not a whole lot to get to in terms of, actual stuff on the field, and I think I kind of always stress that any of these off-season workout statistics or, anything, you take them with a grain of salt. I think there are people that were freaking out about Drake May throwing interceptions in that first, workout open to the media. But it's kind of just like, it doesn't matter, really, to be perfectly honest. I think there are certain things that are good, certain things that are interesting that you can kind of, take from. I think, like, for example, when we were talking about the offensive line, that it's like, oh, okay, that starting five unit of from left to right, Will Campbell, Cole Strange, Garrett Bradbury, Mike Owenu, and Morgan Moses, that was like kind of significant to be like, oh, okay, maybe this is the group that they want to kind of start the offseason with, and we'll kind of see, what happens from there. That maybe they're like, okay, this is the most ideal starting group that we want to start with. And then if there are things that change, that maybe that group changes. But I think it's like outside of things like that, who is getting more reps is kind of interesting. I think Kyle Williams in particular, his performance during those mini camps, I think was interesting to kind of see. It's always good that there are, certain guys that are there, that the participation is good, that they're, guys that are there. I think really the only couple things that I did want to get to was obviously the Stephon Diggs stuff, the video that went viral. It's just like, don't think there's a lot the Patriots can do, from like a contract standpoint. Like they can't just release him. I don't think that they really can do that from like a financial standpoint, but it is just kind of probably a little frustrating for Mike Vrabel to see something like that. A guy that I think should be trying to set an example for some of the younger guys. Now it's like, there's nothing wrong with somebody like having a good time exactly, but it's like, it just is like, I don't know, the optics of that aren't exactly great. And I think that Mike Vrabel kind of sensed that, but I think at the end of the day, if he and Stefon Diggs have conversations about it and they work it out that way, that's fine. It's not really stuff that we really need to know about, but I think it's when you see stuff like that, you wonder, okay, where is somebody's head at? Where is somebody's head at? Are they really as invested as they should be? And I think you hope with somebody like Stefon Diggs, who's rehabbing through an injury, it's kind of important for him to be around. And I understand that these are, voluntary workouts. You don't have to be there, but it's kind of just like I think you'd like for an example to be set maybe a little bit better. But then again, it's like at the end of the day, I don't think it's a really a huge deal, but I think you just hope that that doesn't become a distraction. I think, to be perfectly honest, if this went on during training camp, I think it probably would be a little more concerning. But the fact that it's, voluntary OTAs, it's not really that serious, but it is kind of like, oh, okay, let's, as Mike Vrabel said, let's be smart in our, decision making. So I think the only other bit of news that came out last week, David Andrews announced his retirement. They'll be doing a ceremony, I think, today. So I think just tremendous career for David. Definitely a guy that was very well respected in the organization, did a lot for the community as well. So happy trails to him, definitely, as he was released a couple weeks ago and kind of was not. I kind of wasn't sure whether he would, come back to play or not in the NFL, but obviously decided to hang it up. But definitely a tremendous career and a Patriots legend, for sure. Was a part of two Super Bowl teams, if I'm remembering correctly. Oh, that's right. There was one other thing that I did want to talk about. There was a great article about Travion Anderson in the Boston Globe this morning, just talking about, his kind of upbringing and, his kind of journey through football. So I thought that was kind of interesting. There was good conversation about him as a pass blocker, which I think is definitely something that's really important as, a running back, that it's not just about kind of the running with the ball and catching the ball. There's also parts to being a pass blocker that kind of do make you a more, well-rounded and valuable player. So I do feel like Henderson's a guy that could absolutely challenge for some playing time this year, and I think be a big part of the Patriots offense. So he's definitely a guy that I think worth keeping your eye on during the rest of the off-season program, and then in training camp as well. So really excited to see what he can do for the Patriots on the field this season. So I think otherwise, it's not really a whole lot that's, pressing for the Patriots. Obviously, they'll continue the off-season workouts this week. I think they'll have practices a couple times this week, and then obviously training camp comes up in next month. Just kind of hard to believe that it's already early June and we're getting closer to training camp. So I think that's probably going to do it for the Patriots. We're going to move on. We're going to talk little Revolution as they continued their 9-game unbeaten streak with a 3-0 win against Montreal on Saturday night. Revs also played to a 1-1 tie in DC over the during the week on Wednesday. That was a little bit of a disappointing result as the Revs had taken the lead in stoppage time in the first half and then let the tying goal in stoppage time in the second half. And then just barely, Luis Diaz just barely missed a chance at giving the Revs the win later in stoppage time in the second half, as it was literally the last kick of the game, just missed the far post. It would have been a crazy win for the Revolution if that had gone in. So definitely a, disappointing kind of result that this was now the second game in a row that the Revs had a lead in the second half that they were unable to hold on to. So little bit disappointing, but obviously rebounded really nicely Saturday night in Montreal in the rain. Eli Feingold getting two goals in this one. Peyton Miller scoring the other one. Feingold has scored three goals in the last two games, as he had scored against DC as well. So good to see him kind of get onto the scoreboard, Revs. I always like it when there are guys other than Carlos Hill that are factoring into the scoring. So good to see both of those guys get involved. Peyton Miller's really been a fun guy to watch this season as one of the younger kind of homegrown guys that the Revs have, built up, and I think the Revs usually have had a really solid, kind of homegrown situation with, Noel Buck coming up and playing in over the last couple of years, and now Peyton Miller. So definitely some good stuff there. It was good to see both midfielders get in on the score sheet on Saturday. So yeah, as I mentioned, the unbeaten streak continues. The Revs, I think, playing really solid defense this week, only allowing the one goal in both matches. So definitely good to see the defense kind of get back to normal after they had given up three goals against KC in quick succession in the second half 2 weeks ago. So I think definitely a good rebound with both games against teams that, weren't very good. And that's kind of why it was frustrating for the Revs to not get a win on Wednesday. But I think road point, you're always going to be happy with that. And I think with this Revs team playing as many road games as they have, I think getting results is always good. Even if maybe you're not feeling great about, blowing a couple leads in the second half, with the amount of road games that this team has played this season, I think, you can only feel positive about that. Really, you look at the month of May, the Revs were only at home for one match in MLS play, and that was the scoreless draw against San Jose. But every other game has been on the road. They've been in Montreal, DC, Kansas City, Orlando, and Toronto. So, it's been all over the place for this Revs team, and obviously good to see that they will be, home for the month of June. They'll be off until the 14th, as I believe there's an international break going on right now. So when the Revs come back, they will take on Cincinnati, Nashville, and Colorado all at home, as the Revs are currently still just 2 points back of the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, but a plus five in goal differential, which I think is pretty good and pretty significant. You look at some other teams in the East, NYCFC in ninth place, they have a zero goal differential, as does Chicago, and they're right there with the Revolution. Charlotte FC in eighth place, a plus one. Columbus in fifth, just a plus three. And then this was shocking to me. Cincinnati, second place in the Eastern Conference, just a plus one in goal differential. The Revs obviously have been a team that have, for the most part, struggled to score a lot of goals this season, as they've only scored 19 goals, which is the fourth fewest in the Eastern Conference. But they've only allowed 14 goals, which is by far the fewest in the Eastern Conference. The next closest team is Philadelphia, who's in first place in the conference, just allowed 18 goals. So that's really been a good, solid thing that the Revs can hang their hat on, that they've been really solid defensively, not giving up a lot of goals. Really, you think about that Kansas City game in which they gave up three goals, but I don't think that there's been a game that they've let up more goals, or I think the three was the most that they've allowed. Well, actually, they did allow three against Orlando when they played to a 3-3 tie. But other than those games, the Revs have not, given up more than two goals in a game. So they've been really, really good defensively. So Obviously, they'll be off till the 14th. They'll host FC Cincinnati, as we said, second place in the East. So the Revs have earned some good time off with a 9-game unbeaten streak that they hope to get to 10 games when they play Cincinnati next. So I think that's going to do it for the Revolution. Didn't talk Bruins briefly. There was a report this morning that Joe Sacco is not expected to be named the head coach for the Bruins. No, nothing about maybe him returning as an assistant, but I think that was the news this morning. Marco Sturm also had an interview, it sounded like. Mitch Love is also in contention, was an assistant with the Capitals this past season. And then Jay Woodcroft, obviously the former Oilers head coach, I think is also a finalist as well. So you have to think one of those three guys be the next head coach of the Bruins. I kind of feel like they're going to go with Marco Sturm. That kind of feels like the expected choice. I think, the Bruins connection is the Bruins connection. Doesn't really mean much other than, oh, used to play for the team. It's not like a person that's like, familiar to organization in terms of like working for the organization. So, I think that's good. That's really the only thing that matters to me, that they bring in somebody that is completely new to the organization. I think that sure they could bring in Jay Leach. Joe Sacco, I think, was maybe a possibility. I didn't really ever think he was. But I think it's just for this team, it's just get somebody from outside the organization. And I think, it's going to be interesting to see, what different changes they'll try to make. But I think honestly, like for this team to improve and improve quickly, it's going to have a lot to do with what they do this offseason in terms of what kind of players that they bring in. I also do think that depends a lot on the performance of the guys that are here already. We talked about Swayman last week, and I think if he's able to bounce back to the level that we expect, or even close to the level that we saw in the playoffs in 2023 or 2024, then I think you already have a good foundation. And I think the healthy returns of McAvoy and of Lindholm, I think, will also help as well. And then I think you're hoping for, I don't say bounce back seasons, but I think from guys that maybe didn't perform as well last season, a guy like Pavel Zacha, I think you'd like to see him kind of up his production a little bit more. Pastrnak and Geeky were great offensively last year. Lindholm, I think you want to see more from him offensively as well. And somebody like Zadorov getting kind of more comfortable playing with the Bruins. So I think a lot of it is, on some of the guys that are here, but also what they do in the off season. I don't want to make it sound like the coaching hire doesn't matter, but I kind of think it's like for this team and their performance next year, it's not going to necessarily be, oh, they brought in a new coach who's going to drastically change the way that they play. I don't anticipate that's going to happen. I think especially if they, bring in somebody like Marco Sturm, I don't feel like the way that they play is going to be much different. I think they're still going to want to try to play that defensive structure kind of game where they keep games low scoring and try to beat teams that way. I don't anticipate that they're going to hire somebody that's going to, have them be a high-flying team that tries to score 4 goals a game, and win games 4-3 or 5-4. I don't anticipate that. So it'll be interesting to see, but I do think that there will be an announcement this week about the head coach. So I anticipate that will happen. I think other than that, it's not really any Bruin stuff to get to other than that. So we'll see what happens with the coaching search. So I think that's going to do it for the local teams. It's not really any Celtic stuff that I think was worth talking about. Obviously, I'm assuming we'll have plenty of questions about the Celtics on the mailbag this week, so definitely we'll be getting in some Celtics talk on Friday. So I think sticking with basketball, I think it's a good segue to talk about the NBA finals that would begin Thursday. It would be the Pacers against the Thunder. Pacers beating the Knicks in six games, beating them at home on Saturday night. So the Pacers winning the series in six, their second finals appearance in team history. They also had beaten the Knicks to get to the finals back in 2000. So history repeating itself there. And then obviously the Thunder, just the second time that they've been in the NBA finals as the Thunder. I think they had been in the finals in the 70s when the franchise was in Seattle and was the Sonics. But I think I would say that the Thunder certainly, I think, should be favorites in this series. I think that they've been the best, most consistent team the entire postseason. I know that there are a lot of questions about them coming into the playoffs, but I think that they've pretty much passed every test. I really don't think that there's ever been a point where there was a concern about them. You know, obviously Denver pushed them to seven games, but it really never felt like they were challenged in any way throughout the other series. So I expect the Thunder to win. Indiana is going to make it interesting. They're going to try to run, play fast. But I do think that the Thunder will try to control the tempo, slow it down a little bit. I do think that, you know, SGA has just been the best player in basketball this season. I don't really know if the Pacers really are going to have much of an answer for him. You know, I thought that Aaron Nesmith did a great job defensively on Brunson, but I just think, you know, SGA, it's just a little bit better than Brunson. I do think that his ability to control the game is a little bit better, but I do think, like, the Pacers, with how much they run, play fast, I do think that they will get a game, maybe two. I expect Haliburton to have a really good series. I think Siakam is going to kind of be a key for the Pacers as a guy that has finals experience, and they seem to do really well when he plays well. You know, I think that it was, I don't know what their record is, but it's like they won every game in the Knicks series when he scored like 30 points or scored more than like 25. So I think that he's definitely a key for the Pacers. I think that, you know, Haliburton obviously makes them go, but I do think that Siakam is a guy that the Thunder are going to try to key on. Jalen Williams, I'm excited for America to see how good of a player that he is. I think that a lot of people don't realize how good he is, so he'll be an exciting guy to watch for the Thunder. But I do expect Thunder to win in five or six. Pacers, maybe they get a game or two. I would expect that the Pacers get a game at home. Maybe they get a game in Oklahoma City, but that is a really tough place to play. But yeah, I think I'll say the Thunder in five. I don't think it's going to be like blowouts. I think that it'll be reasonably competitive games. But I do think that Thunder ultimately win the series. So series will start on Thursday night, 8:30 start on ABC in Oklahoma City. So we will now get to Stanley Cup playoffs and get to the other final series that starts this week, the Stanley Cup final between Edmonton and Florida. It's a rematch of last year. Game one of the series begins or starts Wednesday, 8 o'clock in Edmonton. So this will be different from last year, as Florida had the home ice advantage last year. Edmonton's got it this season, I think, could possibly make the difference. I think both teams have been excellent throughout their postseason run. I don't really think that, personally, I don't think either team has really been seriously challenged. You know, I know that Florida did go to a game seven against Toronto, but Toronto in a game seven, it's kind of hard to ever take them seriously. So, you know, Florida won the series, took care of business against Carolina. Carolina, to me, just is, I don't know. I have my own opinions about that team that I kind of just think they're overrated, and they're kind of just like great regular season team. They can win in the playoffs for sure. And I'm not trying to say that they're a bad team, but it does always seem like they kind of run out of steam in the conference finals. And it's kind of surprising because, they were a team that won, 4 games to 1 against the Devils in the first round, 4 games to 1 against the Capitals in the second round. And then Florida just steamrolled them. So I do think it's going to be a good series. I look at Edmonton, a little bit more of a challenge for them, as they dropped the first two games against the Kings in the first round, won 4 in a row, made it look pretty easy against Vegas in the second round, winning in five and then beating the Stars in five in the conference finals, which honestly, I was surprised there, but two teams that I think are clearly the two best teams. I feel like that's kind of what you always look for in these kinds of series, that it's like you want to have it be the two best teams. And I think that that's very clear that both of these two teams definitely belong there. And I think we're going to see another 7-game series. And I think the home ice, I think, is going to make the difference. So I like Edmonton in seven, but it's going to be a really fun series to watch. Really looking forward to the rematch. So other than that, don't really think there was any other hockey stuff to get to, but really excited for Stanley Cup final, obviously, that starts Wednesday at 8 on TNT. So TNT gets the finals this year. So we're going to take a look at some baseball standings here as we're through the month of May. Red Sox sit 8.5 games out of first place in the American League East as they are 29-32. Yankees obviously in first by 5.5 games over Toronto. Detroit still leads the Central, the 6-game lead over Cleveland. Seattle leads the West by a half game over the Astros. In the National League, the Mets lead the East at a game over the Phillies. Cubs lead the Central by 4 games, and the Dodgers lead the West by 2 games. So we'll take a look at a couple of NFL notes. The 49ers finalizing a deal to trade for Eagles defensive end Josh Huff, or Bryce Huff, excuse me. The Steelers and the Dolphins were earlier in the week talking about a trade for tight end Jonnu Smith, former Patriot there. And I think you'll, take a look some WNBA as well. Connecticut Sun finally got their first win over the weekend, but then lost yesterday to the New York Liberty as they tied their own WNBA record with 19 threes in the win yesterday, 100 to 52, the final score. Paige Beckers was placed into concussion protocol. I think that was last week, so she'll miss some time. And we'll take a look here at the standings here, the Liberty and the Lynx, both 7-0. They've started the season very, very strong. So I think it's probably going to do it for the sports this week. I kind of said it was going to be kind of a shorter episode, but good to get through all that stuff. And obviously, looking forward to the mailbag later this week. So please definitely be sure to send in some questions. So I'll get to our top five here. Going a little bit out of the box here, as we've kind of done some. What have we done the last couple of weeks? Yeah, we've done, movies, major sports. So we're going back into food this week, and we are doing the top five condiments. So this was definitely an interesting one for me. I think initially, I thought about doing, specific condiment brands. So, for example, Newman's Own salsa, Baby Ray's barbecue sauce, things like that. So like certain brands, I figure could do that later, down the road. So I think today I'm gonna do just condiments and including, all kinds of brands. So I think we'll start with number five. I'm gonna do ketchup at number five. I think just pretty, basic condiment. I would say you don't really put it on a lot of things, but I think definitely it gets the job done on hot dogs and burgers and potatoes for sure. I think if you're talking about, your French fries or any kind of fries, goes great with ketchup. I think that's kind of where it's like you definitely need to have it in your top five. I think just it's old, reliable, you know what you're gonna get, and it just works. So I think that was an easy call to have it in the top five. Number four here, I have hot sauce. Now I made a distinction here that when I say hot sauce, I mean like a Frank's Red Hot, a Texas Pete, a Tabasco sauce, not including like a buffalo sauce, which is actually on my honorable mention, but we'll get to that later. But I think good applications for hot sauce, eggs. Hot sauce goes great with pizza. I would think that like any kind of, Mexican food, it can go well with as well, just to kind of add a little bit of a spice. I am definitely a person that enjoys hot sauce, and I'll put it on pretty much anything within reason. But I would say it definitely, especially like eggs or breakfast food kind of thing, kicks it up a notch. So I think hot sauce at four is where I will keep it. At number three, I have salsa. Now I think here, including all kinds of salsa, you got your basic, chips and salsa that goes great any time of the day. Salsa I think can go well with, eggs a little bit. Obviously goes great with Mexican food. Although you kind of got to be a little bit careful to not apply too much on like a taco or a fajita or something like that, because it sometimes you get some drippage. But I would say, flavor, any kind of salsa is great. Your chunkies, you got your like mango salsas, get like a black bean salsa, any kind of stuff is just really good. I think, chips and salsa are really just the ultimate snack food. So I think salsa for me at number three. Number two, I have mustard. Now, obviously, I'm talking about all kinds of mustard, honey mustard. But I think mustard can be pretty versatile. I think you talk about putting it on sandwiches, hot dogs and burgers. It goes great with, honey mustard is a great, dipping sauce for like a any kind of chicken. So I would definitely have that as a number two. Number one, we gotta have barbecue sauce. I think it's one of the most versatile condiments. There's so many different kinds too, different regions of the country that do barbecue sauce differently. So it's just, I think, a very easy choice for me, in terms of any kind of barbecue. It goes great with, yeah, pretty much any kind of barbecue. Very underrated as something to put on pizza. If you've ever had barbecue chicken pizza, unbelievable. So it's like, for me, I think that kind of makes a huge difference for barbecue sauce is my number one. So now obviously we'll get into the honorable mentions. I think at buffalo sauce here, I think it's important to have the distinction between this and hot sauce, because I think it's, two totally different things. But I think buffalo sauce goes great with like a buffalo chicken dip or as kind of a sauce for wings. Absolutely outstanding. So gotta have it. Gotta have it there. I'm a person that does enjoy, spicy food, so definitely gotta have it there. Like guacamole, went back and forth about this being in the top five. I just feel like for me, outside of like tortilla chips or Mexican food, I'm not really eating it in any other context. So it's kind of like that was kind of the distinction that I made. But obviously it's an outstanding condiment. All different kinds of guacamoles that you can make. It's very easy to make. But I think definitely got to have it there. I have a ranch here as well. It goes great with, wings. I know I'm might be one of those weirdos that enjoys, ranch instead of blue cheese, but that's just kind of what has always made sense to me with wings. Relish is also on here. I do like a nice relish on like a hot dog from time to time. Really do like pickles, so relish is very good. I don't really have it very often, but I think definitely it's very solid when it comes up. Applesauce as well goes really good with any kind of pork chops in particular. It's also pretty solid on its own too. And then sweet chili sauce, which is very, very specific, but I think it's really good flavor, especially on any kind of like Asian food. Soy sauce you could put on there as well, although soy sauce to me is just makes everything so salty. But I think definitely some good ones here. So I think it's gonna do it for me this week. Obviously looking forward to more questions that we'll get for the mailbag later this week. So definitely be sure to send those in. You got until Friday at 10 a.m. And as always, you can listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And you can always follow along on Twitter and Facebook for the latest updates. We will talk to you folks later this week.